to go. It's Friday in July, and if I sound a bit parched, it's because it's really hot outside. Chances are, at some point this afternoon or evening, you're going to go to the refrigerator for something cold. And if you're one of those people who would prefer a drink with some alcohol in it, you might consider a break from the usual wine spritzer or beer with a twist of lime or an old-fashioned margarita. So here with some suggestions are Alan Katz of Southern Wine and Spirits. He's also the host of the Cocktail Hour on Martha Stewart Radio on Sirius XM. And also with us is Stan Parrish, GQ assistant editor and the magazine's resident mixologist. Welcome to our show. And if you're hearing sounds in the background, it's because all sorts of stuff is being brought out.
You don't mind if we turn the studio into a bar, do you?
Only temporarily.
I'll drink to that. We're also taking our listeners' calls. If you have a favorite summer cocktail or any tips on how to make a perfect one, or if you're down to just a few ingredients in your liquor cabinet and want our mixologist to try and come up with an inventive recipe, you can give us a call. The number is 646-829-3985, or leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. Alan, cocktails allow for nearly endless inventiveness. So what makes a cocktail a cocktail?
Oh, my goodness. Now, that's a wonderful question because there's an historical context and a social context. The social context would simply allow for almost anything in a cocktail-oriented glass. The historical context, which goes back to the early 19th century, New York-centric early 19th century, has a very specific combination of ingredients, and some of the strictest sense would say it has to obviously involve an alcoholic spirit, but also things perhaps like sugar. Interestingly, bitters, which have come back into wonderful popularity in recent years, and that it came to classify a certain style of mixed drink. But in a modern context, it's a mixed alcoholic drink.
The Joy of Cooking emphasizes that it's very important for all cocktails to keep the basic ingredient, meaning liquor, up to 60% of the drink, but never below half. Is that a pretty good rule?
I would say that's a nice generalization. I have not read that before. I find it very interesting. I think it would depend on the day part. You know, the idea of cocktail drinking has become so wonderfully popular again in cities like New York and San Francisco and the Pacific Northwest as well and other cities, that there are drinking day parts that we'd like to appreciate in different ways. You might have an aperitif that is much lighter in alcohol as something you might have just before you sit down or after you sit down for a meal.
And then the old joke of the perfectly dry martini is you fill the glass up with gin and then pass the cork from a bottle of vermouth over it. Stan, I often see cocktail recipes that look very complicated and even require special equipment. Can they be stripped down? Because I don't want to go and buy all that stuff.
They can. Our philosophy of summer cocktails is sort of, you know, three ingredients is sort of the max. When you're entertaining, especially in the summer, the last thing you want to be doing is mixing and muddling an individual drink for every single person who comes over. You know, you want to be a good host. You want to be engaged, which sometimes means stripping things down and keeping things a little bit simpler.
So what would the three ingredients be like category-wise?
Usually a mixer, a base spirit, and then a garnish. I don't know if you've caught on to the whole coconut water craze that's sweeping the country.
I thought it was just sweeping Williamsburg, Brooklyn.
I'm running it across it everywhere I go. But you know, it's marketed as a health food. Basically, it's full of potassium and electrolytes. But one of the best things I think you can do with it is add a little rum. I'm going to pass you this if you care to try it.
This is rum with...
That is rum with a little coconut water and some key lime juice.
It hardly tastes alcoholic.
Exactly, and it is.
Uh-huh. So is that dangerous?
It can be. That's in countries where rum is produced and coconuts are grown. And, you know, usually they'll serve rum with a splash of coconut and some lime. And so that's something we've been doing a lot of lately.
Well, in this case, it would suggest, and I throw this open to you as well, Alan, that sometimes a pairing should be territorial in a way. We have coconut oil and rum coming from similar places.
That's a wonderful thing. It follows really the essential food interests probably of the last generation 15, 20, maybe even 25 years, and the idea and aspiration of finding where our food comes from, food sources, is equally applicable these days to distilled spirits. I've brought some wonderful liqueurs, American fruit liqueurs, just up the road, if you will, from New York City and Warwick Valley. This time of year that you can find wonderful berries and mint and other herbs in the New York City green markets. Great idea. One, because it's fun. But two, because the freshest ingredients oftentimes, with obviousness, have the best flavor.
Can a case be made for a simple rum and coke?
If you like rum and coke, then absolutely.
That's the case.
And there are times when that's a wonderful thing, when you just don't want to do anything else. But I think just in the curiosity of human nature, it's fun in an exploratory way to try and experiment with different ingredients.
Well, it's all about the ingredients. The case can be made for rum and coke, but if I was doing it, I would do a Mexican coke, a coke from Mexico, which is made with cane syrup, with cane sugar, as opposed to high fructose corn syrup.
The coke the way it was originally made.
Exactly. And then, a nice age rum like this Diplomático from Venezuela that we brought today, and key lime for a little more flavor. It all comes down to the ingredients. Gin and tonic is basically a perfect drink, but you can upgrade your tonic from the Canada Dry that you get at a bodega to something like this Q tonic, which is made with cane sugar and really good quinine, and it's.
And where do you get that?
That is available at Whole Foods and supermarkets. I believe it's in supermarkets all across the country.
It is, indeed. It's a national distribution.
Are there certain combinations that work best during the summer? People often enjoy a sweet, salty pairing, like a margarita, for example.
I would say year-round, you're looking for a well-balanced drink. In terms of styles that are tried and true, you want a cocktail that is strong in spirit but balanced in an acidic quality and then also a sweet quality. And then there are certain variations on that. Well, where is your acid coming from? Is it strict lemon juice, or is it orange juice, or maybe a combination of the two?
And citrus is often a favorite ingredient.
Exactly. And then just the same, you can alternate sweeteners. You have sugar, obviously, but there are a multitude of variety of sugars. You could use honey or make a honey syrup, which is a little bit easier to mix in cocktails. And you do that by simply adding a little bit of warm water to a little bit of syrup, and all of a sudden it takes the viscosity away, and it's much easier to work with in a mixing glass. Or agave nectar is something that's also popular. And they all have different flavors. It's not as if they're automatically interchangeable. But I would say the sour-style cocktail, for my personal tastes, are ideal for summer because they're refreshing.
We ask people to write in their favorite recipes on Facebook, and throughout the course of this conversation, I'll get to some of them, and we also invite our listeners to call us at 646-829-3985. My guests are two people who know something about cocktails, Stan Parrish, who is GQ's resident mixologist, and Alan Katz, who is the host of the Cocktail Hour, Martha Stewart Radio's on Sirius XM. And Sophie left this comment. She said, my husband recently made fresh-squeezed lemonade sweetened with a lavender-infused simple syrup and vodka. So good. Is that an invented drink, or is that something that you would recognize as a standard?
Well, I would say the nice thing about it is that they took the care to pick out some authentic ingredients. The idea of lavender in the summer. I mean, you can practically ride out the Long Island Expressway and, as you're sitting bumper to bumper, get out of the car and pick lavender. It's so abundant there. It's wonderful this time of year, and you can infuse a simple syrup or use that directly in the mixing of a cocktail to get both a flavor, but also that wonderful light purple hue is magnificent for a summer drink.
I'm not sure I want to include any ingredient that was growing alongside a highway, but that's a whole other matter. There are a lot of people who do not drink or don't drink alcohol. Do you have any suggestions for non-alcoholic drinks?
We do. They're actually sodas. Homemade sodas can be really delicious. A soda made with either just a basic club soda or something from a soda stream. You can carbonate at home yourself. And then adding something like blood orange juice and simple syrup. It's a great, really refreshing drink that doesn't need any alcohol, but you can't argue with a shot of vodka in it either.
But you can also make drinks that kind of mimic alcoholic drinks, like those vegetarian dishes that mimic meat dishes. Do you think that they're a good idea? Usually they're just filled with sugar, aren't they?
You can try. I would say that it's not my specialty, very honestly, to work with non-alcoholic
Temples.
Drinks. But you can. I think the key in this time of year, again, it's easier from an East Coast perspective, is that you want to make your own fresh juices. And the idea of maybe adding bitters, although the base of bitters is alcohol, it really is not imparting any quantity of alcohol to a drink per se, is that you can use that to add an accent both by flavor but also by aroma. And I think that's a nice little key to making a well-balanced cocktail, is you want something that has that perfume as well as a good flavor.
Gary left this question on our show page. Tonight I'm attending a watermelon-themed party. Food, drinks, all from watermelon. Any great drink ideas for the party?
Watermelon, I know in college you used to infuse, if you will, a watermelon with vodka, but vodka and watermelon juice goes really nicely together, if that's...
A nice thing that I like to do with something like a summer melon, watermelon included, is use Campari or that type of a bitter aperitif as the base spirit. You have Campari or Aperol, things of that herbal quality, and you're going to take maybe three large chunks of watermelon, fresh watermelon, and muddle that in a mixing glass and add about an ounce and a half of Campari, and perhaps then an ounce, which sounds like a lot, of a pear liqueur or a sour cherry liqueur, and shake those ingredients together. You could also add, if you want, just to sweeten it, a splash of fresh apple juice. Not a very alcoholic drink, a wonderful tall aperitif that you would pour over ice in a tall Collins glass.
Now, we've included some recipes on our show page at WNYC.org. Stan, I see that you're a fan of a cognac lemonade. It looks pretty delicious. How do you make it?
Oh, I'm a fan of that cognac lemonade because it is incredibly simple to make. And, you know, once upon a time, I mixed drinks for every single person who showed up at a party, but I was a caterer and I was getting paid for it. The great thing about a cognac lemonade is that you can make it in sort of a large format. You make it in a very large mason jar and you just pour it out as people arrive.
And you suggest doing that in general because, as you said earlier, it allows you to be a good host and not be tied up making drinks for each individual person. Although there is something to be said for what we've just been seeing from Alan, that shaker. That, you know, especially good if you have some Latin music on stereo.
Oh, no, there certainly is. But the nice thing about the cognac lemonade is that it takes, it's, you know, again, the three ingredients that we were talking about, which in this case it's just cognac, which you pour into a large mason jar. Thank you. With some tea bags. And the tea infuses the cognac. And all you do after that is add a few cans of San Pellegrino Limonata. And you just pour it over ice as people arrive.
Well, in the past, it was mostly Planters Punch that you would produce in large quantities. Is that still...
Well, it's interesting. You talk about batch cocktails. Punch, in the high-end world of cocktail mixology, is the trend that takes off from, where you can do batches, whether they be by pitcher or punch bowl. And the wonderful thing is that even if you find them to be somewhat complex, and if you want to make a wonderful punch, you can take some interesting steps to even start perhaps with a multitude of citrus peel. Maybe take 10 lemons and take the peels of all these lemons, add several tablespoons of sugar, and muddle that together. And the perfume of the essential oil from the citrus just infuses with the sugar, and then add your rum and your other ingredients, and perhaps create a fancy little ice block to put in a punch bowl. And it's again, the perfume, the visual, and the taste of the drink.
And it's a way to take care of all of those peels.
That's true, too.
Now, getting back to the watermelon, one of my staff asked, can't you infuse a watermelon? I remember when I was a student in England, people used to shoot fruit. Because they were medical students, they would inject fruit, especially watermelon, with a little gin and put it out in the sun. And then they would slice it up and they had the equivalent of a fruit cocktail.
It's cocktails by the slice.
Right.
Yeah.
You certainly can do that.
Is that something you've done?
I have. I barely remember doing it, but I have done that. I always found, you know, to be honest, that unless you get the right type of watermelon, sort of underripe watermelon, that it tends to disintegrate or degrade in its physical property.
You got to do it quickly.
Yeah.
But the sugar really does turn to alcohol. A listener on the Upper West Side left this question. Any suggestions for what to soak grapes, blueberries, et cetera, in so that they absorb either flavor or alcohol before being frozen and eaten as snacks?
I would say, you know, the idea is you would probably do that with a gin or a rum. I would say, and I'm equally, Stan, a big fan of aged rum for a number of reasons. One, there are a lot on the market. Two, for aged products, when you think of American whiskey or Scotch or Irish whiskey, they can be expensive, but aged rum is still relatively affordable. In this case, I would use an aged or a light rum. Again, you want to be
careful. There are light rums or dark rums.
Exactly.
But in your case, Stan, you brought a rum from Venezuela. I didn't know that there were rums from Venezuela.
There are. I mean, most South American countries and Central American countries produce rum. You know, the Caribbean
is best
known.
Because they all grow sugar.
There's actually very good rums being produced in America now, too.
Yeah.
There's rums being produced up in New Hampshire.
It's interesting. Some grow sugar. Once upon a time, they all grew sugar. I would have to say the truth of the matter is they either all grow sugar or they buy molasses, which is the case. And a lot of these islands, for better or worse, what was sugar plantations is now golf courses.
Let's take a call from Tony from Brooklyn. Hi, Tony. You're on the air.
Hi. I have a drink that I make that I find is extremely thirst-quenching in the summer. It's simple. It's a tall glass filled with ice, one shot of gin, ginger ale, and fresh lime. And I find it very addicting.
Tony, you're a man after
and
my own heart.
One of the things about it is I used to call it a gin buck. I was wondering if a gentleman knew of a name for that.
Well, you're on the right path. I mean, the idea of ginger this time of year is great. It has the already added benefit of sweetness, whether by sugar or corn syrup. You know, you might even try to spice it up a little bit with ginger beer as well, which might just give it a little bit of a tighter texture and a little bit of a spice kick as well. But it's a delicious sounding drink.
Thank you so much for calling us. Since we were talking about rum. Alan, you brought the recipe for a drink called a Midway?
I did. It's interesting. I was out, and I highly recommend going to Governor's Island to see this Mark de Souvereau exhibit that just opened there. I was out there lying under these pieces and thought, boy, I need something refreshing. And you could use any aged rum. That was the real purpose. I'm using a rum from St. Croix, Crujon rum, but they make a very affordable, what's called a single barrel rum. And I combine that with equal parts of Calvados, an apple-based spirit from France, obviously, and dry vermouth. And then again, in that idea of creating an easy sour using fresh lime juice, and most importantly, perhaps, real grenadine, not
now,
supermarket.
What's real grenadine?
You know, it's a great cause to champion wherever you are, that it's not the day glow, nuclear red grenadine that certainly was popular through my childhood for things like Shirley Temple's, but is so cloyingly sweet that you want to take a nap afterwards.
It goes perfectly with a maraschino cherry.
It can, yes. Well, real grenadine, you really have a couple of choices. One, there are products on the market, but two, you know, grenadine is meant to be pomegranate-based, not cherry, not strawberry, but pomegranate-based. And it's meant to be tart.
And where do you get it?
You can get it through online directories. One is by the well-known bar in the West Village called Employees Only, and they have a brand under that same name of grenadine. But you can also make your own. Take pomegranate juice and sugar and reduce it on the stovetop. And if you were making a simple syrup, make your own grenadine. Add a little bit of vanilla bean, perhaps, or cinnamon or clove, even sometimes some cracked black or pink peppercorns. And as it gets more syrupy, turn the heat off. It will cool. Strain everything out of it. And once it's cooled, you simply keep it in a closed container. It will last for several weeks. It shouldn't, because you should be using it, but it would last and keep fresh for several weeks.
We actually have a listener who says that he makes his own tonic water.
Magnificent.
Well, we'll get back to that and more after we take a little break. My guests are Alan Katz of Southern Wine and Spirits, the host of the Cocktail Hour on Martha Stewart Radio on Sirius XM, and Stan Parrish, GQ assistant editor and the magazine's resident mixologist. And we are taking your calls at 646-829-3985. You can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page. So get to it. In case you don't recognize it, that's a song called Scotch on the Rocks by the Wailers. And it's a perfect lead-in to our conversation with Stan Parrish of GQ and Alan Katz of Martha Stewart Radio. We're talking about mixing drinks for the summertime. We have a lot of people writing in. One of our listeners says, I've been ordering the Sazerac at restaurants. Each one seems to do it very differently. What do I need to do to make it on my own?
Well, you need a couple of key ingredients, and there are some simple variations that some tricks of the trade. The traditional manner would be to start with a sugar cube, and the rationale for that is when the Sazerac was created, there wasn't really granulated sugar that you'd pick up in the Domino's box. It would be a loaf of sugar that you would essentially chisel. So you want a sugar cube or perhaps two. And a lot of times you need to be a little bit creative with a recipe, and it calls for a sugar cube and it doesn't say what size. So I would start with two, and you want to douse those a little bit with Peychaud's bitters, the famous bitters that come from New Orleans, and they're pink. By random coincidence,
just happened to have a bottle with you.
I happen to have a bottle in my kit, and I'm gonna pour some in a glass. And what I suggest,
you're a good guy to meet anytime it gets really hot.
What I'm gonna suggest is, just take the aroma. Do not taste these. Mm. The funny thing
about it'll be too bitter.
It will be very bitter. People oftentimes,
it's a wonderful smell.
It's got a wonderful aroma of
a beautiful color too.
Exactly, of licorice and herb quality, and that's really the key, is that you're rinsing a glass with absinthe to start, and that actually will help retain the flavors. So you take a little bit of absinthe, which you can absolutely find wherever you're listening today.
And it does make the heart grow fonder.
It does. It can. Depends how much you drink. But you rinse the glass with absinthe, and then you're taking this sugar, water, a little, you know, teaspoon of water to help the sugar dissolve, add a little bit of Peychaud bitters, and it really depends on your taste. For my preferences, you want to get it very cold in a separate glass with the sugar, the bitters, a little bit of water, and rye whiskey. And there's a traditional usage of cognac that was the original spirit for the Sazerac. And once cognac wasn't available, it really turned into a rye whiskey drink.
What are your preferences, the drinks that emphasize the alcoholic beverage or the ones that mask them so that you almost don't know what you're drinking?
There's times when you want to mask the alcoholic beverage. It all depends on the ingredients. I'm a big fan of drinks that really showcase the spirit. In the summer, especially, one of my favorite cocktails is the daiquiri, which is a classic recipe that calls for just simple syrup, lime juice, and rum. Make it with a clear rum, 2 ounces of rum, an ounce of lime juice, and some simple syrup, and needs nothing else. But it really showcases the rum. It's a bright, refreshing cocktail, perfect for summer.
So most of the drinks you've been talking about, the two of you, are made with rum or with gin.
Yeah, we have been on kind of
it's
a rum
interesting.
Kick, huh?
Yeah, by coincidence.
Coming back to this.
But these are great summer spirits. You do see a little bit less on the whiskey side, or things like Sazeracs or Manhattans. But I would say a whiskey sour, or perhaps a whiskey drink made with a little bit of fresh apple juice as a combination in a whiskey sour, can be wonderfully refreshing.
You have a recipe for a cucumber and mint martini, which we've posted on our website.
This is so easy to make. Well, cucumber I love as an ingredient. I will say it adds a little bit of labor, but to me cucumber is a great ingredient because it's filled with water. And you need water, whether through ice or some other ingredient, to what I like to say appropriately dilute spirits. back to your initial question, I love to taste the spirits or the alcohol in the drink. It's not to get inebriated, but I like the flavor. So to add a little bit of water, to just take the edge off a little bit, is a useful technique, and cucumber does it quite well.
A reminder that if you have any questions for our mixologist, give us a call at 646-829-3985, or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. A lot of people drink beer. In fact, the younger generation seems to be moving back toward beer. But can you mix beer in cocktails?
Absolutely. We haven't touched on that yet, but beer cocktails are some of my favorite things to drink in the summer. One thing I've been doing recently is taking a wheat beer, a lighter beer, something that you would see garnished with a slice of lemon in a bar. And instead of using a lemon, you add a shot of limoncello, of a really cold limoncello to the wheat beer, which gives it a little extra kick and also that lemon flavor. One of my favorite beer cocktails is the Michelada, which is a Mexican beer cocktail, which involves pouring beer over ice to keep it cold, which is something that's done by necessity in Mexico. But you add to the ice, to a glass of ice, you add some hot sauce, some Tabasco, a dash of soy sauce if you want, and some Worcestershire sauce, and then some lime juice, the juice of a whole lime, and you pour the beer over it with some salt.
Do you have a favorite hot sauce?
I generally stick to Tabasco. I've seen people using sriracha sauce in these.
Oh, my goodness. That's amazing.
Yeah. That's
Vietnamese?
It is South Asian. I don't know its specific origin, but it's potent, but it's hot.
They call it a red rooster when they do that, and it has a serious kick to it.
Alan, do you have any other unconventional uses for beer?
I love the ideas that were just mentioned. The Michelada is great because it's so easy to make, and you really can take – at least as a starter position, any style of beer that you like and try and incorporate that.
I mean, whether it's a dark beer or light beer.
Correct.
Let's take a call. We go now to Ricky from Rockland County. Hi, Ricky. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you?
Okay.
I just wanted to mention a drink that I had a few years ago while I was in Cuba. I believe they called it a caranchanchula, and it was going with a rum theme, rum, lemon, honey, and ice. And they used crushed ice, and it was really just so refreshing and light and wonderful.
That sounds fantastic. I mean, Cuba has such a fantastic cocktail tradition with a great American influence. You know, during Prohibition and certainly in the famed Hemingway era, you had many American bartenders who set up shop in Havana specifically, and everything from the daiquiri to, you know, wonderful cocktails like the Old Cuban, essentially a sparkling mojito. Come out of that Cuban tradition.
Yes.
Well, thank you for calling us.
Sure.
And a number of listeners have mentioned they love the Brazilian drink. What is it, the caipirinha?
Well said. A cachaça-based cocktail. And if you haven't had cachaça before, it's in the rum family. It is made from sugarcane, but it has a much more raw or vegetal quality to it, and sometimes people are startled. It is not a one-for-one similarity to rum. It doesn't quite have that sweet nose to it, but it's made from sugarcane. It's a wonderful mixing spirit.
Are wines, can they be included in cocktails? Their champagne often is combined with some kind of a fruit.
Well,
syrup.
What you might take into consideration is one of the most essential cocktail ingredients is vermouth. And vermouth and that style of spirit, if you will, is essentially an aromatized wine. It has been doctored. It's made from grapes in its origin. And people might oftentimes enjoy just vermouth and ice as a nice summer aperitif or summer drink. And that's a wonderful basis to start, I think, a seasonal cocktail that might incorporate fruit or things like sangria that can be incorporated or styled into cocktail manner. So it's a wonderful place to go.
You mentioned champagne, but in the summer, especially sparkling wine, less expensive sparkling wine, you know, if you pay $40 or $50 for a bottle of champagne, it's not necessarily something you want to mix with. But a Prosecco or a Cava can be made into a spritz, which is an Italian cocktail from the Veneto region, which just about everyone drinks starting at 4 o'clock every day of the week all summer. The piazzas fill up, and the cocktail is basically just three parts. It'll be Prosecco and Campari or Aperol, which are two Italian liqueurs, and then soda water or a little bit of gin.
Well, you talked earlier about mixing up big batches. of these drinks. But when you mix a big batch, you're putting a lot of ice in, and the ice melts. So is it important to get going in the early stages or after it's been diluted a bit?
Well, batching can take on a couple of references. One, you're absolutely right. You don't want to over-dilute a drink. The ways to try best to avoid that is, one, you can refrigerate the base mix that you've put together and then perhaps pour that over an ice block. You can also take, say you just take a regular batch cocktail, if you wanted a cucumber mint martini or a coconut and rum, and that you might put over ice later on. You can put that, I prefer glass, particularly when I'm refrigerating something, but you can put that in a glass container in the refrigerator and actually add a little bit of water ahead of time. And it acts just the same way as ice. And so it will start to dilute the drink and then serve the drink over ice when you're ready to pour. But the best thing, and some of the most popular things, is they have trays now that you can make 1 by 1 inch or 2 by 2 inch block ice cubes. And they do melt at a little bit slower rate so that you're not turning a drink into a water slushy.
And there is a great company called Tovolo, which makes a silicone ice tray for blocks of ice in that size. Those blocks fill out an old-fashioned glass really nicely. And they're a great thing to have in your freezer. And the silicone trays mean they're flexible, so there's no more of that chasing projectile ice shards all over your kitchen after you crack a tray.
What's the appropriate length of time to mix a drink in a cocktail shaker?
I would say it depends on the drink. More importantly, it's rare that you can overshake a drink. The choice is whether to shake or stir, first of all. And then I like to shake or stir a cocktail, depending on the recipe, and then just let it settle. Let the drink have its own time with the ice, mellow out, if you will, for 15, 20 seconds, and then strain the cocktail. The ice is still working, and ice is really what makes cocktails an American tradition.
But does it matter whether you shake or stir? In the end, aren't you just mixing it together?
No. It's a long conversation. It depends on the drink. So if you had
something. Is this a chemistry problem?
Well, it could be if you wanted to take it to a certain degree. But at the end of the day, it's not about bruising spirits, as some people like to say, in my opinion anyway. It's really about how much air you want in a cocktail. Do you want a frothy drink or a clean, streamlined cocktail?
Now, you've prepared some drinks here, both of you, and we're using plastic cups. There are purists in the wine world who will only drink Burgundy from a Pinot Noir glass, or they only will drink champagne from a flute. They used to have the old flat kinds of champagne glasses. Now they're long and skinny. Does it matter what you drink a cocktail in?
Well, personally, I am not a purist in this regard, just for practical reasons. You're serving cocktails, especially at your house. Martini glasses seem to me designed to slosh things all over the place. I've served
especially
martinis.
If somebody brushes by you as you're drinking.
Right, and any change in the environment around you is going to cause a spill. So I typically will. I mean, I wouldn't use plastic in my home, but I've served martinis and daiquiris and everything else, which you typically see in those glasses in normal highball glasses.
A listener wondered what kinds of frozen drinks she can make with Kahlua.
I mean, I think the easiest thing to do from a summer standpoint is a variation on a White Russian. And you can use vodka, but you could also use rum. But I would say in place of cream, use ice cream. And you'd probably add that to your blender with about a cup of crushed ice. And you'd simply crushed is better because it makes the blades in your blender work a little bit less. And put your blender on, and you don't want to over whip it, but just get it so that it still has some ice texture to it.
So you like ice cream in a cocktail?
I don't necessarily, personally, or things like, you know, alcoholic milkshakes, but I love ice cream.
Marissa in Brooklyn says, I suggest using a microplane grater to add fresh ginger to San Pellegrino and some homemade simple spirit. Excellent ginger ale without chemicals and not too sweet.
What a wonderful idea. So easy to do. Those zesters are fantastic. That's a great idea, Marissa.
And I'm trying to think of what else we should ask you about. There are just so many. Somebody's looking for a perfect summer sangria recipe, and we have about 30 seconds to give it.
Well, I'll give you one. Start with either a white or rosé wine, and you want to add fruit at its optimum. I like, from a summertime standpoint, peaches, Certainly you can find apples that have been siloed, but I also love cherries. And if you can find cherries, which are in the green markets this time of year, add cherries to that, refrigerate it. And what I like to do is when I serve it, add two things, a sparkling wine and a drizzle of something like the American fruit sour cherry.
We have some recipes posted on our show page. And my great thanks to Alan Katz and Stan Parrish for coming by and talking about mixing drinks for the summer.
My pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
I'm taking Monday off, so guest host Amy Eddings will be talking with Shelley Pasnick, the director for the Center for Children and Technology, about how children are using devices like iPads and how that's changing education and family dynamics. And then Emmy Award winner and comedian Judy Gold talks about her return to the stage in The Judy Show, My Life as a Sitcom. Also, we'll look at how the heroin trade nearly destroyed Alphabet City in the 1980s, plus Bruce Feiler about his experience marching with young protesters in the Arab Spring. The Leonard Lopez Show is produced by Blake Neshick, Stephen Valentino, and Julia Corcoran. Melissa Egan is the executive producer, and we had help today from Kevin Sun. Debbie Fanta was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopez, your host. Thanks for listening. Tune in next week.